You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
We are sponsored by Hover. And basically, Hover is domain management made simple. All right, it's the quickest way to establish and buy a domain name. You can do it under 5 minutes. And if you've ever registered a domain, you know that companies just try to upsell you stuff you don't need. I don't know if that ever happens to you. It's like, you want this? You want this option? No, I don't. I just want to do this, please. I just want to buy one domain. Thank you very much. And here's the best thing about Hover. They have a no-hold phone policy. You don't hold. You just get to somebody. It's fantastic. So if you ever run into a problem, you just call Hover, and a real live human being will answer the phone. Ah! Sorry, I'm getting excited. And by the way, you can get a .com domain, but guess what? You can also get a .net domain, which is totally underused, all right? So I always forget that. I'm always looking at .com, but in fact, you know, you can use a .net. I know a lot of people that are doing it. So I say, do it. It's easy. It's a pretty popular choice. And it's got lots of domain names available. So if you try for .com, go to .net. It might be available. Very important. And by the way, they also offer Google Apps. You can add Google Apps to your domain. Basically, you get everything you already love about the full suite of Google's productivity apps, Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package. You already love and trust Google Apps for Gmail's 25 gigabyte storage and collaborating with chat and file sharing. I don't know if you know this, but Google is a huge company, so you can be, you know, they can be a little hard to get a hold of with your questions and concerns and support needs and things. But that's the best part. You get everything you love about Google Apps, but with the outstanding support of Hover. They make it easy, man. So I say it's a great solution for businesses. It's a very good company. Hover.com/Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, that is. You'll get 10% off. Come on now. Let's get back to the show. Yeah?
Hockey?
You're
yeah.
a hockey fan? Oh, that's right. Yeah. I think I know. You've got hockey legs, dude. I'm not going to lie. I have never seen. You know what you are? What I noticed, and
you
I remember
me.
This. You're perfectly proportioned. And you're and you're Korean and Irish. And I'm sorry, but the majority of Koreans that I know are yeah. athletic, tough people, but they tend to have shorter legs. And genealogically, you can tie that to the Mongols, the Mongol invaders. They're very, very strong, stout, sturdy people.
Yeah.
In fact, soldiers will tell you that the toughest soldiers in the world are the Koreans. They are bad, badass motherfuckers.
Well, I'll say this. Do you know the last war that the Koreans won?
I can answer that question. First of all,
do you want me to tell you?
First of all, the you can't talk about the Korean War because that was a war that was basically.
No, I'm saying the last war that the Koreans won.
It may have been a long, long time ago.
No, it was the Los Angeles riots. That was the last war the Koreans
That's won. Right. That's right. You saw them barricaded and just squeezing off rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were tough. Where was Steve Byrne, who is one of the great comedians working today, star of Sullivan and Son? I'm sounding sensational, but I'm actually being dead serious.
Yeah, I thought you were sounding delicious.
Dude, when people tell me who my favorite comics are, you are always in my top five. I'm not lying about that.
Thank you.
You are as good as it gets.
Which is
my
impressive.
My friends, Dov Davidoff, Steve Byrne, Brett Ernst, the guys I know like Al Madrigal. I don't know Daniel Tosh well, but I know him well. But the people that I personally know, I believe, are as good at being comics as anybody in the history of comedy. And I believe that.
Yeah.
I do. What do you think of that statement?
I don't know. I'm going to back off, but I will say it was funny. I was at the Comedy Store a few weeks ago. I've been on the road so much and working, and I haven't hung out with comics in a long time in L.A. and hung out with D'Elia and Adam Ray, Bobby Lee. We went to a diner after our sets at the Comedy Store, yeah. and we were just sitting there, and we're talking, of course, about comics, and all of us agree – you are the funniest human being we've ever met. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen. Just,
like, we sat there, we're just exchanging stories the whole time. And it's like, I've been on radio shows and they ask me, who's the funniest person? And I always say you, because I remember the one night there was maybe like 10 or 15 comics all sitting in the parking lot,
right.
just hanging out, BS and telling stories. And Callen saunters up as he does, and just starts taking... what he does is he compliments you. He complimented everybody within, like, rapid fire, within 5 minutes.
Gotta lay the groundwork.
Then topped everybody with his own compliments, saying how you could learn from him, how he's stronger. This, well, so he builds you up.
I'm older.
Only to realize,
I'm older. I'll kick all their fucking asses.
I've never seen anything like it, and we were all dying, just holding court, and then just bolting, like, I gotta go do my set. That's how he does it. All right.
You gotta in and out, my friend. In and out, real quick. If you guys want to laugh, apparently the funniest man on the planet, according to Steve Byrne, I'm going to be at the Punchline in Sacramento November 7th, 8th, and 9th. And I end the interview like that. It'd be great. Yeah. I was like, thanks for showing up, Steve.
Brian Callen is SEAL Team six-pack. He's in and out.
Damn straight.
Ride him hard, put him away wet,
Ride
right?
him hard and put him away wet. Have you done the Sacramento Punchline?
I have performed next to the Sleep Train, yes.
How is it?
It's great. I really love it. It's one of those... Look, every comic, I think, wants a classic 80s relic comedy club that's been around forever.
Yep.
It's intimate. It's small. The ceilings are tight, and it just traps laughter.
I
and
love
it's
that.
Great.
I love that. That's one thing that with the advent of corporate comedy, these great rooms and these big rooms, but, man, there's nothing like that tight, intimate experience where you can see the audience, feel them. They're raping you with their eyes.
At least you're with me.
What happened? What'd I say?
Huh?
No, just my quads. My quads are just, they're busting out of my... Are those children wrestling under a tarp? No, those are my fucking quads. Busting out of my... I apologize. I have to immediately apologize for my quads when I get up there.
And, you know, I was in Pittsburgh with Bill Crawford, who you know.
I love Bill.
Great radio DJ. And we were talking again about you. Yeah. And he goes, nobody says the word come like Brian Kelly. Where can I just... Come all over the place.
You've got to draw it out. Yeah, well, that's because you've got to do it. You've got to say it like you are doing it. Come.
I get come, my lips go inside my mouth. You know what I mean? Like some guys make that pursed lips. Mine go inside.
You have the funniest. Your joke about the noise you make when you're having sex, which sounds like you've burned yourself on a stove.
Yeah, or I walk across a cold sheet of ice.
Oh my God, it's almost there. Oh God, look,
I wish you did. You've done some bits that I wish I'd written. One is you're never as gay as when you're riding a dolphin.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And there are two things you want to do before you die. One is catch a squirrel, and two, when someone dies, you want to take both your fingers and close their eyes.
To a stranger, not someone I know.
To a stranger. And then you want to kill a squirrel, catch a squirrel, kill it, and then do that to its eyes.
And then do it to its eyes, yeah.
Yeah.
To me, that's one of the best written bit of all time.
If only you could put all three experiences together, right?
I want Steve to die so I can steal those bits.
Aww. Well, please do, because I'll tell you, those bits are so good, 40,000 views on YouTube. 40,000 views on YouTube.
Which, by the way, is a stadium full, but in today's social media, that sucks.
It's nothing.
I'm friends with Kevin Hart. And Kevin Hart called me and he goes, hey, how come I'm looking at your skits online? How come you only have 17,000 hits? It's weird. I mean, I have a million, so maybe I'll help you out a little bit. Maybe I can, I can like them or something. It's amazing how you have no respect unless you have a million Twitter followers. How many Twitter followers do you have?
Twitter?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Drum roll, 24,000.
Good man.
Yeah.
You're starring on a TV show and based on your life. And
bring
you
out all the
shit.
Accolades. I say it to myself every night before
you.
I go to bed. I go, why do I even do it? Why do I even try?
Has the show, Solomon's
no.
Son, it's not helped in numbers. It's not helped in anything.
I'll say point blank no. Look,
isn't it funny?
As a comic.
It's so funny.
It's like I've done literally everything a comic wants to do. I'm in the middle of doing it.
Yep.
Hour specials. I'm getting ready to tape a third hour special. I do The Tonight Show. I have my own sitcom. I write, produce, and star.
Nobody gives a shit on Thursday
and
night.
And nobody gives a shit.
You can't sell
nobody
tickets
cares.
On a Thursday fucking night.
I just got a call from Flappers. I was there last week. The show's on Thursday. I got a call Monday. We've sold two tickets. Can you blast out on Twitter? I'm like, what? So we can sell four?
It's amazing.
What do I have to?
It's a different. Look, Joe Rogan has a podcast I did the Sony Center in Toronto. 3,000 hard tickets he sold. I mean, he is a prophet. He is the Messiah.
Yeah.
And it's because he talks into a mic. He's very good at it. But this game is changing. Do a sitcom, go fuck yourself. A million views, and that's good. We don't care.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. Well, you need Brian Callen to do an arc.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're into huge numbers.
If you really want to break through to 25,000 Twitter followers, get Brian Callen on.
Well, with this podcast, on one day we have a comic like yourself, and then the other day we have some academic who's written a book. And it's funny, as soon as we started like having writers who wrote books, I think our numbers dipped. People were like, fucking writers? Who wants to read a book? In LA, some of my very close friends, I'm like, you got to read that book. And I literally have had people like Chris D'Elia, who I love, who's smart. But he's like, oh, dude, reading. I'm like, Chris, you're 30. You can't say that.
But
it's so hard.
Like, what is the last book you read?
Merchants of Doubt. I read a lot because of this podcast. I read a book a week almost, right? I
mean, yeah.
To interview the author, I assume.
Yeah.
Merchants of Doubt is an incredible
Did you read
book.
Mine?
I've lived yours. So there's a difference.
Yes. Because that's why I'm here. I'm here to talk about my
I did not know.
My book called Cooking with Your Cat. And if you love cats and you love cooking, you're going to love this book.
This is amazing. When is it coming out, Steve?
It comes out in 9 months.
Yeah. 9 months is going to take you that. I would imagine. What kind of recipes can we look forward to?
Well, I hope you like gazpacho.
Do I ever?
Yeah. Because it's not only food that humans can eat, but cats can eat too.
Steve, I've got to stop you.
Yeah.
What happens? What in the world happens if a little cat fur gets in your gazpacho? I'm sorry. I had to ask it.
Well, that's also why I'm here, because I'm here to talk about my new television show on the Food Network.
Stop it.
Called Dishes.
I knew it.
Everybody likes to watch cooking.
Sure.
Everybody likes cooking.
I do.
But nobody wants to talk about what happens after the party leaves, and that's Dishes.
So in other words, hold on. And I don't know why I didn't think of this, because this is genius. We're going to watch you and probably a friend, and I'm volunteering, washing dishes and probably talking a dish in the dirt.
Well, I just taped the pilot with Michael Bublé, and I just haven't washed you yet.
I love Michael Bublé. I always sing whenever I say his name. This sounds like it's going to be an amazing book and an amazing TV show.
Well, it's a new line.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to take my pants off.
Let the quads out.
What? Let me just let my quads breathe for a second.
Let me just scrub.
I'm gonna scrub myself down. Gotta scrub my dick down.
That healthy dong.
Got a heavy, heavy dong.
God, where'd that mushroom cap come from? Am I on the Smurfs? Oh, that's huge.
Mushroom cap? More like a doorknob.
Oh my God, is this a roadmap? I never saw so much blue in my life. Just veins running up and down, north and south. Take the 10 to the 405 to pleasure.
Sig alert. Hey, is that an app on your dick called Sig alert? Or are those veins? I'm writing that fucking down. I'm writing
veins,
that joke
veins,
down.
Veins, veins.
My dick is so big, it's got an echo. Echo. I don't know if that's my joke. It's got to not be. Oh, God.
Amazing.
Hold on. I'm recording that on the Brian Callen Show. Hold on. Is that an app for Sig Alert, or those just big old angry veins in your dick? Oh, God, that's it. I write jokes like that I know are going to get a huge laugh, and then I do them, and a little part of me dies inside. There's nothing Louis C.K. or George Carlin about them.
Well, those are the jokes where you kill, and you go, and why don't I get on Letterman?
Yeah.
Well, comedy is a very cool kids club. I mean, if you're not with the tastemakers,
I will tell you right now, this is what I've discovered about alt comedy as opposed to stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Alt comedy, you've got to be on the home team. You got to play home field advantage.
That's right.
But if you play on a visitor's team, that's when you realize you're not doing stand-up comedy. I think that most comics that are working, that work the road, that do it, that do the hour, that have the materials, I think most of them play on the visitor's team. You can go anywhere in any situation, in any state, and you can perform stand-up comedy. But I think if you're part of this cool clique right now, that you can't.
How do we get into the other 48?
Listen, I said to my parents the other day. I said, look, at 46 years old, I will say this. If I die tomorrow, know this. As a comic,
you're 61.
I'm 61. I've had work done, so I actually reverse my. There's a clinic, but I said to my parents, I said I will say in my heart, I know that I've kind of realized as a comic what I dreamed of doing, which was I said if you had a meter that measured laughter.
Right.
I don't believe there's anybody who is beating that meter. And I know that's the same for you. I know it's the same for Dove. I know it's the same for Brett. My friends, the people that I think are, to me, who make me laugh, which is, I thought what the point with comedy was, make me laugh in a unique way, and can take that act anywhere, not just in the United States, but in the fucking world, and crush audiences, which you can do, and which the people that I admire can do. That is very satisfying for me. And since I've been doing comedy, which was in 1993 in New York at the Rebar, I think it was called, and watching alt comics, some of whom are very funny, but there is this sort of clicky alternative to comedy. We're so funny, we've come full circle, and now we're so esoteric, and your audience is primarily white as shit, hipster, college educated. It's fine, but try bringing that shit to Miami. Try bringing that shit to a real fucking group of people who work for a living. Good luck. See what happens. See what happens. See how quiet it gets.
But that's
following you or me.
But that, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, do you not think that what's happened with technology is going to change that? I mean, now you guys have the opportunity to put your acts out there for the entire world to judge.
What it'll do is create a niche audience. There is a place for, there's some very funny alt comics. I mean, I think Dimitri and those guys are really funny. I mean, I think Zach Galifianakis in a lot of ways is an alt comic, but funny as fuck.
Yeah.
But so is, for that matter, Maria Bamford, who slays me. But at the same time, these are also people who've been doing comedy for 15 years.
Yeah. Like Maria could go anywhere. Zach can go anywhere. Yes. Dimitri could. Yeah. But I think that there's this.
They're the Comedy Central darlings who are young, and I'm like, all right, I don't get it. I have a problem with NBC's TV shows. I have a problem with all of them. These anti-romantic comedies with a bunch of nerds who I think they're so. They're brimming with irony. They're so ironic.
Right.
It's like, you know, God forbid they actually feel sexual about something. They're puritanical. Those shows are so pure. I mean, they are so antiseptically sexual. There's zero sexuality. They may as well be Victorian women buttoned to the hilt. I mean, God forbid you express aggression, sexuality, you know, human emotions, primal human emotions, the things that make us human and we stay alive for. Nah, that's crazy.
Well, we need another show where someone says something to someone uncomfortably and then they just look deadpan into the camera for 2 seconds.
That's right. What I'm dying for.
Dying for.
But here's the thing. I also think, and I agree with you on everything you're saying, but the ratings are exactly the proof of the pudding with all these shows where...
That's why nobody watches them.
Where it's like, okay, well, I guess it's clever, but clever doesn't make you laugh.
NBC keeps doing the same thing. I don't know who's running that show, but they keep making the same mistake over and over. Get a sense of the tempo of the country. People don't necessarily want to watch that stuff. It's not that... I mean, God, I have friends on these shows. Yeah. And I'm not putting down... I'm not trying to put down anybody. I like... There are some... I mean, Amy Poehler is a friend and one of the funniest women on the planet. I love her.
Absolutely.
Ken Jeong is on Community, I think, or whatever it is. These are funny, great people.
Yeah.
I'm just not crazy about those shows.
I agree, and that's why, you know, I think as a comic too, look, our show came out, I couldn't get on one late night talk show to promote other than the Tonight Show because Jay's always been so good to me. But literally one late night talk show to talk about our show, which is on in the summer. Well, I don't think we're part of that cool clique.
Yeah.
And we are on in the summer. We average 2.5 to 2.7 million, 2.7 million viewers per episode, and we get like a 0.9 to 1 in the demo. And this is on cable in June through August.
Yeah, when people don't watch TV as much, right?
I just think, selfishly speaking, I am literally on the only television show on all those channels that is an Asian American lead that has other Asian Americans on the show. It is not the point of the show.
Right.
We probably have one of the most diverse casts on television.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there is literally no notoriety.
But
no
Steve, isn't that because, and I don't want to be stereotypical, isn't that because all Asians are usually doing math? and we just end the show like that. That's it. Thank you for listening to the Brian Callen Show. Yeah. I've been canceled. You can insult Asians and they actually would never get in together as a group in a protest. They're just very self-contained.
It starts off with one or two going, hey, that's wrong. And then everybody just goes,
I have a job. Fuck that moron.
Got to be to work. Yeah. But yeah, I just think that it comes with doing a multi-cam show, which these days is not cool to do, I guess. But as a comic, I think it makes the most sense for me selfishly. I always wanted to do
a
multi-cam, and I love
less
doing it.
Work.
And the hours are great. The jokes are harder. I mean, there at least every episode we have, there are at least three or four jokes that make me laugh out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Comprised within a great story where all the characters do care about each other, where guys are trying to get laid. So
Steve, you're one of those guys. One of the things that everybody loves you, because you're one of those guys that just have done it so right. You love work. You're a hardworking guy, and you've been doing stand up and you've been doing this for so long. Now you're starring in your own TV show. I wouldn't have called that, Steve. You know why? Because as talented as you are, you're not an actor. You never studied acting, and you do an amazing job on the show. Maybe you have studied acting. I don't know, but you do it.
No.
You do it. You look like you have, and. So much of you're an example of what hard work and a great attitude, but more importantly, you know, you also gave me an experience that I never forgot, which was, you know, you organized these USO tours. How many times have you been to Afghanistan and Iraq to do stand-up?
I've done six or seven of
six
those.
Six or seven. I only did one, and I brag about it. And so, you know.
Still, you did it. I mean, look, there's a lot of comics that won't do those.
Your brother fought for a long time in the war, and that's a big deal, man. That's to me, in this cynical, very selfish, apathetic world, you are somebody that, and I maybe it comes from growing up in Pittsburgh, I don't know what it is, but you have always seemed to think and reach beyond yourself.
Well, yeah, I think you have to, but I think a lot of comics, like I was having this discussion with a comedian the other day, and I think that in any whatever profession it is you choose to engross yourself in, whatever you derive happiness from that you pursue, where ultimately you get the biggest payback in doing what you love and appreciate, I think you've got to embrace failure. I think failure is a huge part of success. There's a lot more failure that goes into every success.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling a comic the other day, he's like, when do you know you're doing it, when it's clicking? And it, you know, I heard it takes 10 years. I go, I think as long as you get up on stage as much as you can, as long as you write as much as you can, but I think ultimately when you can embrace the silence and not be...
It took me a long time to get there.
That's the key to me. It's like when you can get up there, when you can bomb, when it can be uncomfortable, when you're trying out new material and you can hold your hand out and it doesn't shake at all,
mm-hmm.
and you stay in control and you know you're going to win them back. You could do old material, but you got to get through it and you got to keep writing. And I think once you embrace that dark side of stand-up, I think that's what you do.
I can't relate to that. I've never bombed. But the point is this. but it really is true. And I also think that there's no getting there. I mean, you know, I'm working on this second hour, and I probably will be on the cover of Time magazine. But the interesting thing about it is that it never ends. It never ends. It's always a challenge. So I'll do this, and then I got to write new stuff and come up with new stuff and be thematic as opposed to just being funny. And you know,
yeah. You got to peel
back
the
layers. My next hour is called "Why Asian Americans Are the Problem," and and I think I do a good job of making that argument, which is what I want to talk to you about. By the way, your case.
I'll explain that.
And I say this That is,
there's pink whales on it.
Well, yeah, and stereotypically, one would consider, if I was
like
an ignorant,
a Hello Kitty.
If I was an ignorant man, I'd say that's a very gay case. But what I mean by gay is not that you have sex with men. There's nothing wrong with that, but just that is a very it seems like you produce a lot of estrogen. Am I right about that? That's all I mean.
I broke my phone; it shattered.
Oh,
and I didn't get a new case for it. And my wife had this extra case laying around. I just threw it on there, so
there
it's my wife's case.
There you go. Making,
but she
you
gave
probably
it to
broke
me.
It making love.
No, she gave it to me while she was fingering me.
Well, that, see, now again, that would, to me, I've never been fingered, and I just, that seems a
I
little.
Was on my back holding my ankles.
Okay, you know, see, now again, that feels like you are, that's an expression of
is
being.
Is that gay enough?
Well, that's a feminine expression, I would say. I would argue that's not as traditionally masculine an expression as you can get when you hold your ankles and your wife fingers your taint.
Not my taint.
Oh, you're.
She was inside me.
Oh, that's good stuff.
She has Ponce de Leon fingers. They explore, and she.
Ponce de Leon fingers. Who said this wasn't a historic podcast?
Yeah. You know?
We got all the bases. I'm going to steal that, too.
You know, I will say this, because when you were telling me about work and all that stuff, and I was thinking about a conversation I had with Neil Brennan, who is a good friend. And
yes.
Co-creator of Chappelle's Show, which he'll be quick to remind you of that credit. He and I were talking in the parking lot of the Comedy Store. We're talking about successes and going along and having a career full of accolades or accomplishments. And he said, you know what I would do? I would take all the money I made and I would trade it in right now to be happy. And we started talking about happiness and personal goals. And I said, every time I achieved something in stand-up, I never felt fulfilled. I always wanted the next thing. I always wanted to do better. I always wanted this. And I said, Neil, to be honest, like, and the conversation ended. And the next time I saw him, I said, I realized, last time we were talking, what truly I derive happiness from, and it's when I come home and my little girl runs up to me. Or when I'm leaving and she's wailing, just crying. And it's so tough to leave her. And I know the minute I go back in, I'll be happy. And I never thought of life in that perspective, because when I was younger, you want the Tonight Show, you want an hour special, you want to sell out a theater. But at the end of the day, when you do those things, those are cool things. And when I was younger, those things could get you laid. And even getting laid, you think, that's going to make...
Sure.
It's just like, it's fun.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between having fun and being happy. And I think that once I settled down, I said, I'm going to stop going out and drinking and carousing and, you know, doing all those
things.
Doing
heroin and stuff.
Yeah. But like hooking up, you know, and being a pig.
Yeah.
And I focused on trying to be a good guy in a relationship and then having a daughter and getting married. And I think that's ultimately what made me personally happy.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. That's something that's another way of saying you got yourself into a situation where other people's happiness was more important than your own. I mean, where you're in a position to give. I think for a man, I always say that, you know, you should ultimately arrive at a position where you're in a position of service. I even think stand-up is that way. Mm-hmm. I like thinking of stand-up as, yes, it's very fulfilling, but part of what I like is that people spend a lot of money to come see you. They pay a babysitter and stuff. I bring the money. That's why I work really hard no matter where I'm at. If you come to see me, I'm gonna come off that stage somewhat sweaty.
Yeah.
You know, because I owe it to you. I don't take it for granted that you came to see me. And I think the same thing goes with a family. I mean, when you have that responsibility, when you've taken on that responsibility, you better be responsible to it.
Absolutely,
But the other side of it is happiness. That concept is missing the mark. I think I don't even think about that. I mean, if you want to talk about just when I'm the happiest in some ways, it might be when I'm just drinking wine with my buddies, shooting the shit like this.
Yeah.
Like I love just talking. I haven't seen you in a while, but just talking and connecting, that doesn't get any better. But there's another side to happiness. I mean, we all need some certainty. We all need to know that we have a roof over our head and food on
Absolutely,
the table.
Yeah.
And when somebody's not going to step out of the dark and blow our head off. But the other side of happiness, I think, is you need some adventure. You need some uncertainty. You need to think, I'm not sure what's going to happen next. I had this very frank conversation with my wife. I said, you know, I think 100% trust in a relationship is the biggest fucking lie in the world, because if you trusted me 1,000%, I trusted you 1,000%, guess who would get fat and stop banging? both of us. And I'm being metaphorical about that.
Right.
You need to feel as though you're competing with the world. Things are a little precarious. There is a precipice. The great unknown needs to be there so you can just fucking sometimes take that jump and sprout wings. God, right. I am poetic as shit. What were you going to say?
Well, it's the Teddy Roosevelt thing, right? It's the man in the ring. That's what we need. And actually, Rena brought up this book by Esther Perel, which is all about
Rena, our engineer.
She brought up the book is basically called Mating in Captivity, and the point is that all of the goals of a relationship are about intimacy and trust and all that sort of stuff, which is absolutely antithetical to attraction. You know, it's,
well, women have, I think, more of that predilection than do men. I mean, mm-hmm. women, they say, you know. The bulk of the literature, I haven't read it all, but from what I've seen, is women tend to the connection is more important to women. For men, being significant and leaving a mark is more important.
Mm-hmm. Guys, we could get academic all day, but let's face the facts. Bitches be crazy. Oh, right?
Shit.
Oh, snap.
Steve Byrne, ladies and gentlemen.
I agree. I do agree with you guys, and I'm not doing a bit. I'm not going to do my bit, but I was working on a bit about being married and what a challenge it is because like all your life as a guy, you just hang out with dudes.
Yeah.
You just hang out with dudes, and then girls hang out with girls, and then when you do get married and you take that plunge, it's literally a different species.
Have you been reading Gottman?
No.
Oh, that's from Gottman's book about the fact that universally across every culture, boys and girls stop playing with the opposite sex by the time they're seven. And it doesn't matter if you're Chinese, if you're Afghan, you're American. The sexes separate themselves by the time they're five, six, seven. And my daughter is five, hasn't got one boyfriend. It's all girls that come over, and boys are the same way. And by the time they're five, they're like, those girls – boring. You want to play with dolls or whatever it is, or whatever you're hardwired to do. I want to kick shit over and punch things and shoot things.
But we all know that there's one kid that does like that.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
He's a little different.
He's different.
He has a pink whale
and
on
that
his.
That does exist. And that exists.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
How long? How many guys have you banged? I mean, and do you
on accident?
On accident.
On accident, like in Vegas. You want to go city by city?
On accident. Or, there was that time I
do you have
a Grindr
on your phone right now?
There's the question. Grindr. God, I tell you what, I envy gay men that they have those apps. Not anymore, but when I was a young man, I would definitely have been a Grindr user if there was some chick.
So a friend of mine told me about Tinder recently, which is like Grindr for straight people, and it's amazing. Because half of the equation is a woman, there is none of that hooking up. Like, you know, it's not, they call it Grindr for straight people, but it is just not, because there's no, you know.
I mean, I don't know that I would, even if I was single, I don't know that that's something I would have done because... It's just. I feel like too much of a scumbag. But I would feel like too much of one if I was actually taking steps, technological steps to get laid. Like,
Brian.
All right, I do it here, guys. Bam, like honorary user. I have like 50,000 frequent flyer miles because I use it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing that upsets me is that I totally missed the boat on. I didn't get a cell phone until. After I graduated college, you know, I think I lived in New York 2 years until I got in a cell phone.
Right.
So to know that all these kids are doing all these things in pictures and I'm like,
it's amazing.
Oh, man.
How many dick pics have you sent?
How many dick pics have you received?
None. I've never taken a picture of my dick.
Yeah. I've taken a lot.
I've gotten a few. Yeah. Yours is my screensaver on my phone.
Thank you. Thank you. What is that? A Chiquita banana? Nope. It's Brian's piece. He's got good arch to that bad boy. Good arch. Dude, honestly, this is what I hear all the time. You got good arch, bro. You got good arch.
Well, somebody said to me the other day, they go, is that that rock formation that the Boy Scouts toppled over in Arizona? I go, no, that's Brian Callen's dong.
That's Brian Callen's dong.
That's his head.
And all the warts around it.
Yeah.
The warts.
Oh, God.
He just leaves those warts unattended. You call them warts. He calls them decoration. He calls them. He calls them a frame.
Yeah, battle scars.
Oh, yeah. Warts, schmorts.
Yeah. Ew. You know, bomber pilots will mark their kills on the side. Brian just does it with warts.
With fucking warts. Something disgusting about that. Like, that even turns my stomach. No.
That's normal.
That turns my stomach.
You know what turns my stomach?
What?
Candiru.
Oh, this is the fish that swims in your dick. We just had a David Grand who wrote The Lost City of Z on, and he was talking about this guy who went and explored the Amazon back in the turn of the century.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good place you wanted to go. You didn't come out. No, you died.
Yeah.
Now, what is your goal besides exploring the Amazon? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Doing the same stuff, right? Aren't you living your goal?
I am right now, but I mean, there's always more you want to accomplish. Yeah. And as I've gotten to be in the writer's room on a show, and you know, I started writing a lot more. So in my downtime, I've always had ideas of like, oh, I'd like to see a film like that. I just said, well, I'll write it in my off time. So that's what I've been doing.
Can I make a suggestion for the book that changed my writing life? And I had him on the podcast, John Truby's book, The Anatomy of Story. I don't believe anybody should write anything until they've read that book. And I feel very strongly about that. And I've read every book on writing there is, from Save the Cat to you name it, Your Screenplay Sucks, which is actually a great fucking book too.
Yeah.
But you should begin with John Truby. And he teaches a class on sitcoms. He is the authority.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Makes a fortune as a script doctor and all that.
Only because you say so.
Thank you.
And when I go to him... and I take his class, I go, I'm referred by Brian Callen.
Yeah.
I expect 25.
Guess what?
Off.
You can take it online.
Oh, you can.
Yeah. The John Truby like workshop. How many times do I talk about that guy?
Often.
The book changed. Like I went, oh, that's why there are 5 really good writers in Hollywood. Oh, this guy's broken it down. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You learn everything from this podcast. what do you spend your days doing when you play with your daughter?
Play with the daughter. I write. You know, I live right by the Los Angeles Public Library downtown. So when I wrote my second hour, I would go there and I'd force myself to sit there for an hour a day and just write.
Yep.
Just write. That's how you do it. That's how you do it.
Right.
And I'm doing this third hour and the same thing. Yep. I walk over there. I just sit there, pen and paper, and I just, what can I think about? What pisses me off? What irritates me? What drives me
crazy? Are you going to do about the fact that this business for us has changed so much in that you write a one hour and there's, you can't release a DVD.
I'm growing out my facial hair.
Good.
I'm going to become vegan.
Good.
I'm going to skateboard everywhere.
Excellent.
Skinny jeans.
Be dusty.
Ray-Ban.
Yep.
I'm going to wear a knit cap in August.
And then I'm going to beat you with a sack of apples and you're just going to disappear into a cloud of dust because you're dusty like
But
all
before
skaters.
That, I'm going to bring a notebook on stage with me everywhere. And go, I'm just working on stuff. So if it bombs, just know it's still a work in progress.
My favorite kind of comic. I'm so ironic, I can't even try to be funny, everybody.
Yeah.
God forbid, gauche to be good.
I don't want people to laugh at my shows. I want them to go, I couldn't think of that.
Mm, yeah, try doing that with a working class audience, a black audience, a Latino audience. Try doing that to people who actually work for a living.
Yeah.
Try doing that to people who live in the real world. See what happens. See how quiet you're fucking... See how well that goes over.
Well, I
want to
do that
guys.
On USO shows.
Oh,
once
yeah.
Once just come back from a firefight.
Right, right.
It's like, isn't that clever, guys?
Yeah.
Am I cute?
It's called get in touch with objective reality before I storm the stage and punch you in the face. Or pump you in the face. actually, Freudian slip, pump you in the face. I'm a fucking savage. Steve Byrne, you are a man who keeps me in touch with reality, and it's much appreciated. I'm not kidding. People like you are important for this thing we call... Dan, that was an excellent pause.
That sounds like something someone says to you before they flip the kill switch.
Oh.
Something bad is going to happen after a compliment like that.
Something bad. Steve, you're a really, really good guy and somebody I've always... been jealous of. the fire pit.
Next thing I know, I'm in a ditch and dirt is being shoveled over my face.
And you just, the last image is you just see me masturbating over.
Just, yeah. Sorry, Steve, I just got to
Here's some gum for the afterlife. God bless you.
That's how you pay your way across the river. What you just hand a like handful of gum.
White worms. That was the thing. It's so disgusting.
Yeah. Oh,
so disgusting.
Just the most disgusting things you can say when you're having an orgasm.
White worms.
This podcast is sponsored. We're never going to get sponsored after this. Whatever. You know what's great about podcasting? It's the last frontier, the last bastion of free speech. This and stand-up. I get to be who I really am.
Yeah.
No lies. Well, I mean.
Some.
Like I can't the fact divulge that you, everything.
The fact that you don't have Tinder on your phone right now.
Right. Like that. You know that stuff. Like, I don't know where to get great fucking blow. I'm getting high as shit after this, everybody. Just how quickly would you spiral into shit? Blow is never really funny, is it? Yeah, you hear about Brian? What? You got into blow. Oh, how'd that work out for him?
I never saw cocaine. Like, I never did it because I grew up with Len Bias.
Did you?
Do you remember that?
I sure do.
I didn't grow up with him, but I grew up at that time
when
that story happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember I was at a hockey tournament, and I was really young, and my father goes, he had it all. My father was pissed, because my father was like, that kid had it all.
Well, wasn't he supposed to go to the Celtics?
He was going to go to the Celtics, out of Maryland.
It was such a tragedy.
He was going to be like Jordan before Jordan.
Yeah.
And
just died on the floor outside a club.
I guess it was the first time he tried it or, you know, who knows.
Well, he was very tall and his heart stopped. I mean, doing blows and such.
It's also the amazing is the shit they put in there now. You know, all the horse tranquilizers sorts of other
weird
chemicals.
Not to brag, I get clean coke. I mean, check my website, guys, briancallen.com. Clean coke. I mean, this shit is P.I.O.R.
I was in Bogota.
I was in Edmonton, Alberta. I get kidnapped by a group of Ukrainian dudes, one bigger than the next, and this one dude with shark eyes is just looking at me, and thickest neck I've ever seen in my life. And they were working, and they were like talking, and they were ordering drinks, and I was like, these guys seem really organized. And this girl, who was this la-di-da with bruises on her thighs and a short skirt, clearly from a pole, and
you were hanging out with
heels.
All the mercenaries from the first Taken movie.
That's exactly. That couldn't be a better description.
Yeah.
And she goes, you know who they are, right? I go, no. She goes, those guys run all the drugs for all the guys who work on the oil fields. I go, what a surprise. So the manager goes, we're going to a party at their house. They're having a party. I go, dude, I'm not going to some, you know, I'm taking my car if we're going there.
Yeah.
I take my rent-a-car. He's got to lock his pit bull up.
Oh.
I walk in. There's just like all these like skinny blonde. The kind of girls, you don't go near those girls because you know they belong to one of these guys.
Right.
So
right.
don't you know, just be. And I was Eddie from The Hangover. They were all like, oh yeah, you know, who got the Eddie from that, you know. And they were actually really nice, big, fucking powerful criminals. And he locks his pit bull up, who's just a lion. And I turn and I see the shark eyes guy shaving blow off a brick. With straws already cut up.
Jesus.
And he goes, bro, come try this. I go, no, you know, dude, I'm good, man. I'm not, you know. And he goes, hey, this is our stash. This shit is as clean as it gets. And he pushes this heavy line toward me. And I'm like, oh boy, how do I get out of this? And before I can even make a move, this blonde girl, the blonde girl who told me who they are, she just kind of brushes by me and just snorts this huge line. I was like, this is going to be a bad situation. I got out of that party because there was this little collie that was lost and kept coming to the front door. And I go, I got to do something. And I grabbed the dog and put it in my car and looked around for its owner and then couldn't find, you know, the dog's place. And so I ended up killing
the dog.
I fucked the dog. I felt bad, but I felt I had to because it was scared.
Because you're both lonely.
And we were both lonely. And
you're in another country.
Collies have very similar vaginas to the girls that I date. So that dog was that.
Sight.
No, that collie was a real dog. Anyway. Oh, God. What a terrible joke.
The road, though. Yeah. That's the great thing. You want to talk about before when you're talking about adventure and excitement.
Yeah.
You go out after a show on the road with strangers. You never know where you'll end up ever. This
incredible.
One time I was in Charlie Goodnight's. Do you remember that
club? Sure. I was just there.
It's a great club.
Yeah.
And it's one of those clubs, it's every comic's dream, where you have the comedy club where you it's close and intimate, and downstairs is a nightclub, and you're like, right. Oh, God,
and
this
and
is
you
great.
Go down and you're the man.
Yeah.
You got a built-in rap. You walk down and everybody wants to talk to you. Every girl wants to take pictures. It's great.
Yeah, free drinks. And so yeah. there's this like cowgirl, and she got the cutoff jeans and cowboy boots and a hat, and she just looked gorgeous. And all these guys are staring at her.
Yeah.
I end up going back home with her, and she's like, We're on the main road, then we get on a highway, then we get off the highway to another main road, to a side road, to a desolate road, to a dirt road, to like
to an open grave.
To Bates Motel.
I'm not joking, a dirt road in the middle of like the woods.
She pulls her wig off, she's got a huge dick and holds a knife to her throat. I don't know how it ends, sorry.
We're in her trailer.
Oh my God.
Hooking up. And
that's very hot, by the way. I'm sorry.
It was pretty awesome. And then her roommate or the other girl that we were hanging out with starts banging on the door. She goes, "Ricky's home, Ricky's home." And I never did like the movie thing where you're pulling your pants up.
Oh, my God.
And I jump out and I go, "Who's Ricky?" She goes, "Oh, my boyfriend. He's in the Marines."
Oh, Jesus.
Pants come up out the window. I hide under the trailer and hear him bang her.
No.
And then they keep partying, and I can't move because there's twigs everywhere. And if anything snaps and I start running or something, this guy's got a gun.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I hung out under the trailer till like 4 in the morning until they all passed out. And then walked my way.
That's crazy.
It was the worst night.
So after you bang her, she bangs
him. I didn't. Oh, I didn't even get the chance to.
Oh, Ricky's home.
Ricky.
Hey, thanks a lot, freak.
Yeah.
That's kind of hot, though.
Out the window. The old movie thing where you get to pull your pants up and be like, "Who's hot? What?"
Oh, that scandalous bitch.
Yeah. I had no idea.
That's my kind of girl.
But talk about, like, what a great situation for her, right?
Yeah,
she hooks
no
up
kidding.
With you,
yeah.
Then she gets fucked by Ricky, and then she falls asleep. You, on the other hand.
Now, did Ricky have a big dick? Just curious. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was thinking about was when I was masturbating under the trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
But
as you're rubbing one out.
This one time I was, you know, you go out, you drink, you hang out, and then I had a bad meal with this girl, okay? We go back, we hang out, everything's great. So I go do morning radio. So I'm doing this morning radio, and I get in the elevator. I'm like, oh, my stomach. And then I think I fart. I didn't fart.
Oh, no.
I literally shit my pants in the elevator.
No. Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
So I go into my hotel room, and the girl's still in there, okay? So I'm like, shit, I got to do something. So I take my dirty clothes, and I throw them out in the lobby.
Done it.
You know,
done
garbage it. Trash
sure.
can by, the, by the soda machine. Yeah.
Yeah. Your hepatitis rag.
I get in my room. I shower. I'm like, I'm all clean. Okay, everything's okay. I crawl into the bed because I am tired. And it's all wet.
She peed the bed.
So she wakes up. She goes, "Oh, my God." I go, "What?" She goes, "I pissed the bed. I'm so sorry. Sometimes when I'm really drunk, I pee the bed." I go, hey, it's okay. These things happen. She's like, "Wow, you're being really kind of cool about it." And in my head, I'm like, almost like someone who just shit his pants. That kind of cool.
I mean, exactly. You peed the bed, I shat my pants.
Yeah.
I mean, we make a great couple. Oh, everybody, check it out. The fecal couple.
It's a Depends ad.
It's the exactly.
When we get married, we both pull out the rings, but we go, pull our finger. Yeah, you put the ring on.
I love those. I would tell more road stories, but I'm married.
Yeah, those are the safe ones.
I've had some great. I've had some road stories. I've done some really outrageous, despicable things. It's just that what happens is you're alone. You're lonely. You're on the road.
Yeah.
You're young. You're like, whoa. I can get laid for doing this. You know, girls like it. I want to make out with him. No, I want to make out with him. You were with
Why
me.
Why don't we all make out?
You were
girl?
With me. You were with me when I was doing Beechers. I think it was you and Brett downstairs.
Oh my God.
When LA Laker girls were taking turns making out with me. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I want to kiss him. The LA Laker, the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
I was making out with like all of them. I was dressed like a pimp. I want to kiss him. You're a 10. I was like, Jesus.
And I'm like, I was on the show too.
I was, and I think I had a girl. I was waiting in my room, and then I couldn't bring it up. I was terrible.
I won't get into details, but I'll say this.
The night I met my wife, by the way.
That night, I never saw anything like it in my life, and I'll just leave it at that. I've never, ever, ever to this day seen anything like it.
Yeah, so just recognize, listeners, that. Back in the day, I put up some numbers. It's not something I'm proud of, but I was a young man, and I was, look, we're all having fun. In fact, by the way, what's funny about what you guys saw, but I've told Brett this, was that you guys thought I was just bringing girls up to my room. Guess what? the dancers, a lot of the dancers for the Beecher show, they were using my room to change, and they had their bags up there. So I would walk them up to my room, and everybody was like, dude, he's bringing girl after girl up to his room, and I let that myth just stay alive. Stay alive.
Well, you shouldn't have told me. That's
like
a magician.
I know, but I got to tell you, you're my friend. I can't keep that. I mean, I didn't need... I think I also did my share of, you know...
Yeah.
Bad stuff. So
I don't respect you as much as I used to.
What is amazing, though, is that, you know, because I've heard a bunch of road stories just hanging out with Brian and some of the other comics. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's personality really comes through in, like, what fucked up shit they did. It's a real Rorschach test. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Dove's stories.
Oh, God. Dove's Davidoff is on another level.
Yeah.
And Dove, what's great about Dove is he never he doesn't lie about anything. I became close to him. The day I decided this guy was one of my closest friends was he started the story in mixed company. This is 10 years ago in mixed company with a bunch of people he didn't even know. And he literally goes like this. And he didn't even think anything else. He goes, I was with a hooker one time in New York. And I went, that guy's that's my kind of guy right there. Like, fuck yourself.
He's so honest, you think he's lying.
Oh, my God. Jim Norton is another one.
Oh,
Jim
yeah.
Norton, I've never heard anything like it. I mean, that guy is just, but I respect it.
Yeah, is somebody so completely honest, warts and all, literally, warts and all.
Well, we all have them, and it's the people that don't admit to it or hide it. And I understand why you're hiding it, I get it, but just don't judge me now, you know? I mean, at least, you know. I'm not saying it's all good, and I do think you have to come to terms with any kind of addiction or apathetic behavior.
Yeah.
I do think it behooves you, like you were just talking about, you gain a great deal more out of being somebody who practices self-restriction, who practices being a family man and all that
right.
that entails, right?
Yeah.
There is a lot of gold to be gleaned from that kind of behavior. It's true. If you want the goodies, don't eat like a pig. Don't do drugs. It's just the age. It's those religious and philosophical wisdoms that have been passed down for 5,000 years. There's a reason they're still around. They're actually right.
And I think that there's – look, you think at some point you're going to outgrow it.
Yeah.
You're going to mature. But all those things you do after show or before show are habitual.
That's right.
You've done virtue,
you just said it. Virtue is a habit.
Yeah.
Virtue is a habit. I mean, that's what the Greeks say. You know, you've got to practice those kinds of things.
Yeah. And once I realized if I continue down this path, it's going to be unhealthy. I've got to go the other way and adhere to some of those principles that are passed down from generation
because,
to generation.
Because, well, at the end of the day,
you're... And it did,
and
for
you,
me,
and
personally.
You knew in your heart you were a good guy. You're a good person. And I think that's where it starts, where you just go, I'm a good person. I want to do right by people.
Yeah.
You know?
Because we know as comics, it's very easy to end up 50 alone. And you wonder, where did it all go?
Yeah.
Time has flown by. I mean, I remember when I moved to Los Angeles, I was like 32 or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm 39 now. It's like that.
Yeah.
I can't believe how quick it's all flown.
I just turned 32. And for me, I'm realizing now that at 32 and and as athletic as I am, I'm definitely going to get a new girl by the time I'm 50.
Right. It's not 1997.
What did I say? What happened? Huh? Sorry. I'm losing. I'm all dizzy. Steve, I know where I'm going to be November 7th, 8th, and 9th. I'll be in Sacramento. I also know where I'll be November 29th and 30th. I'll be at Wise Guys in Salt Lake City. Have you done that club?
No.
I'll be there, and I look forward to doing that in Salt Lake City. I don't know. Where are you going to be, Steve?
I don't know, but you go to Steve Byrne Live, L-I-V-E, steveburnlive.com, and that's my website, and it's got all the dates and all that good stuff.
Go there
and
every day.
I'm working on the hour. So.
I love it.
Come on out.
All right.
Check it out.
Steve Byrne, you're the best.
Brian
Callen. It's a good podcast, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
I'm going to say this before I leave, and I really mean this.
Yeah.
You guys are the best friends I've ever had.
Steve, that seems a little... I mean, that's so awkward. But we appreciate it. Hey, Hunter, let's fuck him.
Hold on, let me grab my ankles.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.